Good morning. Will you pray with me? God, I thank you for your sacrificial love. Would you speak to us this morning through your written word and lead us to the living word, your Son, Jesus Christ. Amen. Please be seated. So today is a special Sunday, as we know. You may have noticed some busyness around in the church hall kitchen as Eggs Benedict's brunch is prepared for us. And we had Wendy's wonderful children's focus this morning. It is Mother's Day, a day when we give a bit of love and appreciation to all the women in our lives and in this church family who mother us and mother those we love. And you don't have to have your own children to be celebrated on Mother's Day, right? Especially when you're in a church family, because we are mothers and fathers and daughters and sons and grandchildren and brothers and sisters to one another. And I'm so grateful to have all of you as my family, especially as I'm raising my son. Rob and I are raising our son among you. But did you know that it's also a special Sunday for another reason? This Sunday is also Good Shepherd Sunday in our tradition, so you will have heard that in some of the prayers we've said already and in our reading this morning, the theme that Jesus is the Good Shepherd. What might these two special occasions have to do with one another? Well, I've never been a shepherd. Well, unless you count the nativity play, but that probably, I don't think there was a lot of shepherding knowledge handed over at that time. But I have learned a few things about being a mum in the past year and a half. I feel like I always talk about William in my sermons, but that's my life right now. So he is 18 months old, and he's at that stage where he has started repeating things back to us that we say to him all the time. So it's, I hear some oohs. It is a dangerous time and a wonderful time. We've all had colds in our house this week. We have tested negative for COVID every single day, and Will had a PCR test because he's still able to get one and it's negative. But we've had some pretty nasty colds this week, and his nose has just been running nonstop. And you know when you just like wipe a kid's nose over and over and over again, it gets really red? It's really, really sad. It's so painful. So we've been putting Vaseline on it to try and make it feel better. And the other day I was putting Vaseline on his nose. We have this little pot and I'm rubbing it on his nose. And he said to me, I nose. And I was like, what is he saying? And I was like, yeah, that's your nose. And then he grabbed the little pot and he pretended to put some on his finger and reached up to my nose. And he says, I know. And then I realized, oh, that's what I say to him when I put Vaseline on his nose. As I'm trying to like reassure him, I hadn't even noticed I was saying it. I say, I know, because it's so sore. And here he is saying this back to me. I had this moment, I was like, oh, that's what you're saying. And it was kind of sweet because he was giving me back this reassurance that I had been giving him. I feel particularly aware of the sacrifice of motherhood this morning because I think I slept maybe 2.5 hours last night because he is just coughing. He's at that stage where he's coughing while he's lying down. And it's keeping him awake and keeping all of us awake. And it's so sad. We can hear him on the noise monitor and he's just coughing away. And I know how tired he is. And I just want to take it from him. I just want to be the one who's coughing so that he doesn't have to. And I think probably many of you can relate to that feeling. I think there's something about parenthood that kind of brings to the surface this sense of sacrificial, imperfect sacrificial love in us as humans. Human motherly love, any kind of parental love, is not perfect, obviously. And in some cases, it can be pretty disordered and maybe even harmful. And I want to just acknowledge out loud that I know this day isn't easy for everyone. It is a day of joy and celebration, but for some people, it can bring up some pretty painful feelings, maybe feelings of grief or loss or pain or neglect. But for those of us who have been lucky enough to have had a loving parental figure in our lives, there is something about this loving relationship that can give us a glimpse into God's love, I think, as Wendy so wonderfully showed us this morning. There's a reason that Jesus called God not just Lord or God Almighty, but Father, Abba, his dad. And perhaps you know already that there's also a whole stream in the Christian tradition that is so rich. Our tradition is so rich with so many images. But there is this whole stream of tradition that goes right back to the early church of also thinking of God as a mother, which is something we don't hear about very often. Particularly, this was something that was talked about in the medieval church. And if you think about it, one of the images that gets talked about in medieval theology about this is childbirth, which is kind of a strange image. But actually, something that everyone has been through in medieval times, childbirth, and quite dangerous, actually, for many women. Here's this process that's necessary for bringing life into the world, but would have been extremely painful and potentially quite dangerous. And actually, some of the theology you read in the church talks about Jesus as a mother for that very reason. There's this parallel, this idea of sacrificial love, a sacrificial love even unto death that brings about new life. Let's talk about that over coffee and fruit bread. Decided I want to say that every time I preach a sermon at some point. Eggs Benedict. Let's talk about that over Eggs Benedict. Now, today, of course, is Good Shepherd Sunday, and so we're given another image of who God is and what God's love is like. And this image is also an image of sacrificial love. So in the section before the passage we heard today in our gospel, Jesus talks about being the good shepherd who will lay down his life for his sheep. I think at first, this image, Jesus as the good shepherd, seems quite straightforward. But if we look a bit more closely at our text for today, we might find that the image is a bit stranger than we had first thought. Perhaps unsurprisingly, Revelation certainly gives us a bit of a strange picture. So in the Revelation reading today, we have this vision of an uncountable multitude of people from every background and race and language, and along with angels and some other strange beings, they're worshipping God together, saying, "Salvation belongs to our God, who is seated on the throne and to the Lamb." And it becomes clear to John, who's the one receiving this vision, that these people who are worshipping God have been through a great ordeal. Sometimes the word used there is tribulation. But that now, in this moment, in this vision, they are protected by God. And the text says, and these are famous lines, "They will hunger no more and thirst no more. The sun will not strike them, nor any scorching heat. For the Lamb at the center of the throne will be their shepherd. And he will guide them to springs of the water of life, and God will wipe away every tear from their eyes. For the Lamb at the center of the throne will be their shepherd." Now that is a strange image. The Lamb is the one that needs the shepherd. It's vulnerable and weak. How can a lamb be a shepherd? What is going on here? I'm going to ask you to hold on to that question as we look to our gospel. So our gospel reading today is from chapter 10 of John's gospel. And we started kind of in the middle of Jesus' conversation at verse 22. But the whole of that chapter leading up to the part that we read is all about Jesus talking about being the good shepherd. And in the verses that we heard, we find this contrast being made between those around Jesus who are opposing him and questioning him. "How long will you keep us in suspense?" they say. "If you are the Messiah, tell us plainly." And these people are contrasted with those around him who believe that the work he is doing is the work of God his Father. And Jesus essentially says to these people questioning him, "I have told you who I am through the things that I've done. The works that I do in my Father's name testify about me." In other words, it should be clear who I am by the fact that God works through me. God himself testifies to me by working through me. And he says to him the following lines: "You do not believe because you are not my sheep. My sheep listen to my voice. I know them and they follow me. I give them eternal life and they shall never perish. No one will snatch them out of my hand. My Father who has given them to me is greater than all. No one can snatch them out of my Father's hand. I and the Father are one." I think it would be easy to read this passage and to just hear a pretty simple contrast. Some people believe and some people don't. Some people are Jesus' sheep and some people are not. And of course, I think we hear it and we hear ourselves inside that. So we maybe hear it and we think we're the ones who believe in Jesus. We know him, we are his sheep. And those people over there, they don't believe him and they don't know him. They are not his sheep. But if we look more closely, somehow it doesn't seem that simple. Because those who are Jesus' sheep are his sheep, not because they know him, but because God the Father has given them to Jesus. And it seems that it is God who is the one who is ensuring that they remain his sheep. No one can snatch them out of my Father's hand. And look at that line in the middle about the sheep. This really caught my attention this week. My sheep listen to my voice. I know them and they follow me. I think the first time I read that line, I read something different. I read, my sheep listen to my voice, they know me and they follow me. But that's not what it says. My sheep listen to my voice, I know them and they follow me. I don't think this passage is about the idea that some people are saved and some are not. It's not a justification for an us and them. Something more is happening here, I think. Let's consider a broader context. John's gospel is full of signs and miracles in the lead up to this passage. Many very well-known ones. So Jesus turns water into wine, he feeds the 5,000, he encounters the Samaritan woman at the well, he heals a man at Bethesda by the pool, and he heals a man born blind, to name just a few of the encounters that have been happening in the lead up to this passage. And as we walk with Jesus and we hear of these encounters, if you read the whole of it up to this point, you get this sense that there are two stories kind of happening at the same time, two streams. On the one side, we have these people who are encountering Jesus and whose lives are being changed by him. These people who become exemplars to us of those who believe of his sheep. And at the same time, throughout these 10 chapters, you have this kind of ongoing low hum of grumbling voices of people around these encounters, seeing what's happening or hearing what's happening and just not sure what to make of it, asking questions, questioning those who've been healed, questioning Jesus. But these people who have encountered Jesus, these exemplars of the faith, the people who are Jesus' sheep, are actually not very exemplary. They don't always seem to fully understand what has happened to him, even after they've been healed. So for example, the man at the pool at Bethesda who was healed by Jesus, after he's healed, the Jewish leaders come up to him and ask him what's happened. They say, who is this fellow who told you to pick up your mat and walk? And the text tells us that the man who was healed had no idea who had healed him, because Jesus had slipped away into the crowd after it had happened. And the man who was born blind after he was healed was also questioned by the Jewish leaders. They asked him how he received his sight, and his answers are so matter of fact. He says, he put mud on my eyes, and I washed, and now I see. So they press him further, and there's this kind of back and forth. This is the chapter right before chapter 10. And eventually, they say to him, we know this man, Jesus, is a sinner. And the man born blind says, sinner or not, I don't know. But one thing I do know, I was blind and now I see. And in fact, Jesus returns to both of these men after they've had these conversations, because he needs to tell them more plainly who he is, who it is that has healed them. Because even though they were on the receiving end of these miracles, they didn't yet fully understand what was going on. These sheep were not in God's fold simply because they believed and others did not. Not because they understood more than theirs around them or their intellect or self-motivation. They are Jesus' sheep because Jesus meets them and Jesus knows them. He knows who they are and what they need, and he meets them in that need. And when they still don't fully understand who he is, Jesus returns to them and continues to lead them. They follow not the one that they know, not at first. They follow the one that knows them. My sheep listen to my voice. I know them, and they follow me. There's a humility here in these encounters and a grace. So amidst the tumult of these questions, this intellectual attempt to understand what is going on, who is Jesus, what is he doing, is he healing people, why is he doing it? In the midst of this, there are these gracious encounters of with God through Jesus and with a God who knows what they need and calls them by name. These are gracious encounters with a loving God who will do everything to bring these sheep into his fold. And so when we think about that broader context of what is happening in John's gospel, I think to hear the passage we heard today and to hear something triumphant or something othering me and them, something that puts us on the inside and others on the outside of God's love, I just think it's missing something. It's missing the humility of these encounters. I think it's missing the bigger picture of what's happening in John's gospel. So who are we when we hear this passage? Who do we find ourselves relating to? Are we Jesus' sheep, the ones who hear his voice and follow him? Or are we the ones who don't believe because we are not his sheep? Are we the man born blind who has his sight restored? Or are we the grumbling voices, uncertain what to make of Jesus, questioning who he is and what he's doing? Well, I think we're both. In John's prologue, we hear that the Word who was with God in the beginning, this Word has been made flesh and dwelt among us. John says he was in the world, and though the world was made through him, the world did not recognize him. John tells us he came to that which was his own, but his own did not receive him. The world did not recognize him. We did not recognize him. And maybe I just speak for myself here, but I think if we're really honest with ourselves, even our faith is not purely our own. If it were not for the grace of God encountering us, none of us would be here. All we, like sheep, have gone astray. And so God, in his great mercy, becomes not just our shepherd, he also becomes the sheep. In this broken relationship between us and God, God secures it from both sides. Jesus, fully God, reveals God to us and saves us, the Good Shepherd, healing us, guiding us, protecting us. And Jesus, fully human, accepts this love from the Father and loves him right back, perfectly, without hesitation, without pride, without the human brokenness that we all know so well. He is the sheep, the one who hears God's voice, knows God's voice, and follows him. For the Lamb at the center of the throne will be their shepherd. So what does this Good Shepherd, what does Jesus show us about who God is? Jesus shows us that God sacrifices everything to heal this relationship with us. Not because he is almighty and he has to be worshipped by us, but because he knows us and he loves us like a father, like a mother, who would do anything to take away the pain of her child. And because he wants to be a part of our lives. For the Lamb at the center of the throne will be their shepherd, and he will guide them to springs of the water of life. Thanks be to God.